some of your stories.
Why is that? I think
we got a great opportunity for a podcast.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah. Leaf. But
Leaf Garrett.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Before we say anything.
Hey, it is 7 o'clock, Doug.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. You know what else?
What's that?
We broadcast from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario.
And it's pouring rain out there right now.
Is it still pouring?
Yeah.
How do you know? You haven't been out there.
We have
frosted windows.
A couple minutes ago, two people came in with umbrellas, and they're very wet. The umbrellas, not the people.
Good.
Okay. The other thing that with these hikes, these are all parks, you know, provincial parks.
They are.
Then there are the national parks that also have data and, you know, they collect a little bit of data. Mm-hmm. Environment Canada collects the data. So if you're inclined to start playing with ideas, you can go and grab these different bits of information and then track some of the parks that you go to.
And, me?
Yeah. You, me.
How do you do such things? I suppose there's like a guy out there on the YouTube that doesn't.
I'll bet there is.
Let me see.
No, we're not going to do that.
No,
because
I'm going
to
look.
I want to shift gears to talk about food.
Okay,
the fall
you can
food
talk.
Because we're going to
fall food.
We have got a special guest set up, and
oh, yeah?
You're going to like this because we'll be
no
able
way
to go drink that tea that you brought in, and I've got my my coffee ready to go. So we're just going to set this up. But I wanted to do that colors and trails and activities on those trails. So taking photos, nowadays you can listen for the birds and those apps that they have, like the one from Cornell University. They have an app where you can see what's happening and hear what's happening, right?
At Cornell?
Yeah, Cornell. They have a whole an app called Merlin. And you just turn it on and let it listen, and it records for a little bit, and it tells you, identifies by sound, birds.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you've seen that. There's also an app where some friends were showing me a couple weeks ago, middle of September, and what we noticed was that they were using it to identify plants along the trail.
Yeah, I've used that.
Okay, and I got my sister-in-law has an app for fungi.
Oh yeah,
yeah, and you go in different seasons.
I don't think I trust that one to the.
I'm not saying trust any of these apps.
Why not?
Because you don't know who wrote it.
Oh, they know.
No.
Yeah, they do.
Anyway, so there's one for fish.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, if you don't know what fish it is, then you can say, oh, this one. But the one with the fish, though, is very important because how many of that type of fish from that lake, whatever it is in Ontario, and there's an app for that.
Cool.
Yeah. Should I be eating whitefish?
Probably
salmon,
not.
Salmon, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Or how many am I allowed to eat in a month?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
None.
But that, you know, speaking of food...
Do they have anything that'll tell you what kind of fruit is in the market?
No. I bet they have an app for that.
I'm sure there is.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm going to let you go because Sarah's all set.
Oh, is she good?
Yeah, she's going to take over for a little bit. I'm talking about food security, and I did an interview with her.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to talk a bit about it. And then a couple of songs, and Mike Byrne with his new song. We're going to pull him up and play him right after Sarah talks.
Cool.
And then I have that interview that I told you about with Ramon.
Cool.
Okay, so we're all set to go, right?
Yep.
You have to talk for a little bit.
What do I need to say? Well, okay, so I called up the YouTubes, and I put on there mapping your trail walk, and as a guy pops right up here 3 years ago, he's like, here's how you do it with Google Maps.
Mm.
So how to map a walk or run in 1 minute. So there's that. not really what you're talking about. You mean get a book and today it's sunny.
No, you can do that too.
It's there's a high of 22. There's rain in the air.
Okay. Well, you're going to show me how to do that after.
Oh, look, a squirrel.
Okay, here we go. We're going to listen to get Sarah set up. We'll give her a second or two to settle into her chair, and here we go.
With Open Mouths, the podcast is hosted by Carnita Lilla, Associate Curator, Art of Africa at Agnes Etherington Art Center. She sits down with artists, musicians, curators, and spoken word poets to discuss the expressions of their practice. She finds out how they found their artistic voice, which life events shaped them, and who their inspirations are. Find new episodes on Digital Agnes, CFRC's website, and on your favorite podcasting platform. Subscribe now and join us for moving and inspiring conversations.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
Colon cancer is the number two killer of all cancers. It can affect anyone. But with early detection, the survival rate is estimated at 90%. The key? A simple test you do in your own home.
I'm Ann Murray, and I lost a very dear friend to colon cancer. He was 49, and had he been tested, he might still be with us.
Talk to your doctor. Get your test. Not knowing is not the answer.
For more information or to donate, visit coloncancercanada.ca. Colon Cancer Canada. We're behind, you're behind.
Every day, you hear something new on CFRC. Can you keep up? You need a weekly recap. Catch up with What's Climbing Friday mornings at 10. The Charts on CFRC.
Well, here on Aboriginal Voices, we've been spending some time, and we will continue to spend time, talking about food security. And we have a very special guest coming back to our studios here at CFRC. Sarah, how are you today?
I am good. Thank you so much for having me back.
Oh, this is fabulous. And, you know, it is getting cooler, and a lot of the people out there are thinking, you know, what foods could we be eating, what else do we need to worry about? And I know in some communities they've been out hunting or fishing to get food that they're going to be able to put in their freezers or process it as like smoked or canned or something of that nature. So we'll see what happens with this. But when it comes to nutrition and getting good foods, that's why you're here today to help us understand what we should be doing and where we might get resources.
Sounds good.
So the first thing I would say would be around you and around me in October and early November, we've been hearing gunshots, and that's because there's been waterfowl hunting, ducks and geese, and I know there's been bow hunting for wild turkeys as well. That's not very noisy, but I know that's happening, because I know some people in my community who put two or three wild turkeys away for the winter. So can you help me understand a little bit about game hunting and good storage and then planning? Because last week you talked a bit about using the planning guide, mm-hmm. and we don't need large portions of these proteins, but we do need them.
Yes, absolutely. So our game meats and poultry, whether it's hunted or farmed, they're all good protein sources. And protein makes up a quarter of that healthy balanced plate that we talked about last time on the Canada's Food Guide. protein is really important because it's kind of like the building blocks of our body, and it makes up all the structural components like our hair, our skin, our nails, our muscle, our immune system, all our hormones and things like that. So we want to make sure we're getting enough protein. However, North Americans tend to overconsume protein portions. And last time we were talking about portion sizes and that being around the size of a deck of cards for a thicker cut. Or another analogy that will be lost on younger listeners, but for thinner things like fish, fillets, like a checkbook kind of size. And that's around 3 ounces.
They're not going to know checkbooks.
They're not going to know checkbooks.
They might not know fillet either. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's true. And so with the new Canada's Food Guide, the recommendations around our protein food sources, and actually all the recommendations in this food guide is really around chronic disease prevention and management. And a huge part of that is diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and certain types of cancer. And so dietary patterns that are food choices that are high in more processed, higher saturated fat protein foods, so more of our animal protein sources, they are, there's an increased risk of cardiovascular disease and certain types of cancer, colorectal being one. So watching our consumption of these types of things. However, it gets a little bit more complicated than that when we talk about game meats and things like that. Because when we look at red meats, typically people think of beef, which depending on the cut can be very high in saturated fats, which is not great for our heart health because of its impact on our cholesterol panel, essentially, on our blood work. However, our game meats, they're much leaner. Okay, so again, depending on the cut, there's a lot less saturated fat in those meats, so they're a much healthier choice. And it's a huge part of a lot of culture to harvest food for that coming winter and that coming year in the fall. And so safe food handling practices are very important. And using freezing as a way to preserve that food is best over things like salting, which sodium and salt has implications in heart health as well. The big one being blood pressure and stroke risk. So if we can avoid more salting practices and do more freezing, that's a much healthier way to store those types of foods.
So you're talking about bison?
Mm-hmm.
Now, people won't realize, but there are bison farms in the Kingston area.
Yeah.
And you can buy bison in some food stores in the Kingston area. And I know out west they have places where you can buy, you know, bison and put in your freezer.
Mm-hmm.
But then we're looking at deer and moose, and there's not many elk around us, but they're the reintroduction of elk sort of around Bancroft area by the Ministry of Natural Resources, just so that they would be part of the ecosystem and also there for local people to be able to hunt and put in their food basket. And so those are the kinds of wild games you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. So if we think of the way that beef is produced, farmers make more money if their cows weigh more. And so they're fed a lot. And we also prefer fattier cuts of meat from a taste palate in general, when I'm talking about North Americans. And it's those higher fat cuts that have that huge satiety feeling or mouth feel that we're all after, the melt in your mouth sensation.
Are you telling me that I now have to stop looking thinking, oh, look at all this marbling?
Yeah, the marbling. Yeah. So then that's the big difference between our red meats and our poultry. So with our red meats, of course, if there's any of that white fat, if you can trim that off, that's better because that's a really potent source of the saturated fats. So in red meats, the fat interspersed in the muscle. So even if we're trimming off the marbling, there's still going to be some saturated fats there. But of course, our leaner cuts, our leaner meats in general, so animals that have been walking around over large areas, they will be leaner, of course, than something that's been sitting in a field eating a lot.
Or in some cases, the feedlots are, they don't sit anywhere. They just go to the trough and eat and then come back and there's a water bin and more feed.
Yeah, exactly. They're worth more to the farmers because those types of cuts are more expensive. But anyways, if we can trim the visible fat, that's great. But in our poultry, the saturated fat is just the layer under the skin, and there's very little in the actual meat. There's a little bit more in the darker meats, but it's a much leaner protein source for sure.
I just thought of last week's show, and you said that you get everybody involved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, here's our chicken, and the young person has to, pull the skin off and take the fat away.
Yeah.
And we teach them from the beginning.
Yeah, as long as they're washing their hands really well after.
It's funny because you just brought back a memory that I have, because when I was probably 10 years old, we had chickens on our property, and I built a chicken coop for them and everything, and then late October we had to process them for the freezer.
Mm-hmm.
But we had to do that at home, and that process was a shock to me. I had never seen it done before. I always thought you take the chickens to the abattoir and then you kind of bring them home.
Yeah.
All in bags, ready to go.
Yeah.
No, this was done at home. And I'm pretty sure that my parents had decided this is a good thing for us to learn.
Yeah. And it is a good, it gives you a much bigger appreciation for where food comes from.
Mm-hmm. So that's then land-based proteins. What about from the water?
Yeah, so fish is actually, our general healthy eating guidelines are at least 2 servings of fish a week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So depending on where you're from, your culture, that's, sometimes easier said than done. But if you're not eating much fish, do try to increase your consumption because it's a very low saturated fat protein source. So if we're eating more fish, we're maybe displacing some other protein sources that might not be as healthy. And it's a good source of unsaturated fats. So the type of fat in it is a much heart healthier fat as well.
And then, some people have areas where they do the fishing in their rivers, or not so much in the lakes as much, but the lakes of Ontario are we all think are clean.
Mm-hmm.
They look clean.
Yeah.
But there are chemicals there that may have an impact on our bodies and our health. And so what can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. So the main concern for fish is mercury content. And so mercury kind of gets concentrated within the fish, depending on where it sits in that food chain. So our smaller fish are quite low in mercury, so we can eat lots of them. But as we kind of go up the food chain, when fish are concerned, that mercury kind of bioaccumulates, and then some of our larger fish can be quite high in mercury, so we would want to watch our consumption of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I know a few years ago I was looking at this carefully, and the Ministry of Natural Resources Ontario, and I don't know if it's still there, but they had a list of all of the lakes of Ontario, and they had the sort of the level of different chemicals, and instead of saying arsenic or mercury or some of the other chemicals that are there that you worry about, they basically said how many fish from that lake could be comfortably eaten in a month.
Yeah.
And what shocked me were fish like whitefish, where people, you know, that's their staple.
Yeah.
Once a month.
Yeah.
For a portion of whitefish, not the whole fish.
You know?
So back to the family, you know, everybody eating it, then you've got to worry about that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Again, it would the local health unit be a place to go to, or?
Yeah, I know our Kingston Health Unit had a really nice resource on this years ago, but I'm not sure if it's available online, unfortunately. But the health units would be a great place to start. We'll check out the Ministry of Natural Resources website.
You're
first.
Sending me off on a new project. Yeah, the Ministry of Natural Resources, and people at home could do this too, but I'll do that, and we'll talk about it later in this month. But also the local health unit, the Kingston one. And, you know, the health units keep changing in size.
Yeah.
And so, you know, some of these things may be lost if we don't go and get it soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's on my notes.
Yeah.
And we'll report on it later in November here on our show. Anything else that you would want to throw in here about, you know, maybe smoking the fish or some of the meats, or you mentioned already how much salt you don't want to put on.
I
think back to when people were first traveling through, you know, the French and the Scottish would come and they would salt everything to be able to carry it, and it wouldn't be destroyed down the line.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how many people died because of doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Yeah, salt was used as a preservative.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like everything, right? You have to weigh your pros and cons. And in that situation, it was better to use salt to preserve our food than to let our food go bad.
Right. That was back to what you said last week. Yeah. How much we throw away.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so we were talking about the cold weather and hunting season, and it made me think of soups and stew season. And that can be a very healthy way to prepare, especially those leaner cuts of red meats. And it can be a great way to throw in some of our really heart healthy plant protein sources, like legumes, black beans, chickpeas, lentils, things like that, into any soup or stew. They take on the flavor of what you're cooking them with. And they can help us maybe have a little bit less of the red meat and we can have it last longer, so we don't need quite as much. And then also make it a very heart healthy meal as well.
Two things there. And I'm going to start with the beans, because this is the second time you mentioned it, and I forgot to ask you the last time. With beans, you can actually buy dried beans, and you know, some of the specialty stores, but also some of the big grocery stores.
Yeah.
And but then, how do you prepare enough of that you have it available to use? You know, you should plan a day ahead.
Yeah.
But some of the beans, for example, they require a day or a day and a half to process them yourself at home.
Yeah. So our pulses, so like dried beans, essentially, they need to be soaked for like 24 hours before you prepare them. So that's where that planning piece that we've talked about a few times really is important, which can be very difficult if you have a busy household. So I'm going to direct people to another website. It's www.pulses.org. So it's P-U-L-S-E-S. There's lots of resources on preparing and storing dried beans. And then lentils.org, which is lentils.org. The lentils are a little bit easier because they don't require as much soaking or as long of soaking before. If you're getting the dried and you're soaking them, they tend to pack much more flavor. They're very good. Personally, I rely on the canned ones a lot. And then if you're buying canned, you're going to want to look for the no salt added varieties as well. Yeah, but then they're very easy. Yeah, and you can roast them. You can add them to soups and stews. They freeze well. If you open a can and you're only going to use half of it, that can sometimes be frustrating. But they freeze well, and then you can just thaw them out or reheat them. But yeah.
So the same with the beans that you process, like chickpeas, for mm-hmm. example. You can process a bunch, and then you have all these leftover ones. You can actually put them in and freeze them.
Yeah.
Ready in the right size.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and that, again, helps reduce food waste. And then the plant, these plant protein sources, they're much more cost-effective. Mm-hmm. So they can be a way to bulk up a meal at a lower cost, too.
What about rice? You know, wild rice is good. We you know, everybody knows that. But what about other types of rices?
Yeah, so rice is good, too. Again, that would be that other quarter of our balanced plate. It would fit into that grains group. We're encouraging more whole grains. So wild rice would fit into that category really well. Brown rice is higher in fiber than white rice. But as long as you're choosing a longer grain white rice, the nutritional content is very similar. Okay. There is slightly more fiber, and we want more fiber for, again, heart health, regulating blood sugars, reducing risk of colorectal cancers and things like that. But if you really hate brown rice, for example, it has a little bit more of a woody texture. You can choose like a longer grain white rice. And that would be a healthy thing to add to soups too.
Okay. So that we've gone through two of my plate.
Yeah.
That's half the plate. Well, actually, no, the other half, well, the other half is going to be real easy. What vegetables do we pull out? Mostly carrots, but, you know, we'll see what else there is. Lots of root vegetables mm-hmm. are easy to store.
Very easy to store. Usually come with a cheaper price tag. They still taste good in the winter if you're buying them from stores. They're really easy to throw into soups and stews. So this time of year, like carrots and squash and things mm-hmm. like that. Very nutritious. And with vegetables, we just want to get a variety, and we want different colors. So orange is good. Dark mm-hmm. green is good.
Right.
Yeah. And that applies to the fruit as well.
Being the main cook at some of the big dinners that we have, I tend to put carrot, turnip, and squash into a pot, boil it up. I save the water to put the turkey bones into, or the big chicken bones into, to make our soup stock.
Mm-hmm.
But then we mash them together. So now we have a medley, and the colors, you know, mostly orange. But at least I've had some family members say, oh, I don't want them all together. But after they've tried it a few times, and I just don't, I do make a little plate for the people who really don't like it. That's fine. You know, so there's a little plate with three or four carrots and a couple of sticks of turnip and a little bit of mashed squash. But the rest of it goes into this great big bin is done at the end of the meal with, you know, mm-hmm. a bunch of people around.
Yeah, and so then you can use that stock for stews, soups, and, you know, you know what's going into it. You can control the salt.
I know,
and
there's no salt in it.
Yeah, perfect.
Well, I wouldn't say no salt. Yeah, but anyway, that's really good. So we've done soups and stews and wild fish. And is there anywhere that I could look to see what fishes I should be getting? I think at one point you had a list for us on fish. You don't have to search for it. But is there a place that people could go to check this out?
Oh, good question. I might have to look that up. But any fish is good, okay, mm-hmm. as long as we're watching for contaminants and things like that. Our fattier fish have more omega-3 fats, which is great. So think of like rainbow trout and salmon and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So a balance between like pink fish, white fish, they're all good.
Oh, good. Yeah. That Arctic char?
Arctic char.
Oh, yeah, that's really tasty.
Yeah.
Well, Sarah, thank you very much for this conversation today, and I'm sure people will be sending more notes to us. I just want to remind listeners here at Aboriginal Voices, you can send it, Aboriginal Voices, all lowercase letters, all one word, Aboriginal Voices, at cfrc.ca. And Sarah, last word to you on the whole thing, especially with soups. What's your favorite soup?
Well, this time of year, I love a butternut squash soup. Mm. And then you can get your protein source from some roasted chickpeas on top, which is quite delicious. And I like a little dollop of like a plain Greek yogurt for extra protein as well and make it a little creamier. Mm. That's my favorite.
Excellent. would you come back next week and talk about sugar?
Absolutely. I am going to give one more tip, though, about soups.
Yeah.
So especially if time is a constraint, food preparation is an issue or whatever, I really recommend diluting out canned soup. So we were talking a little bit about sodium earlier, and all of our canned soups are quite high in sodium. But if you put that canned soup, whether it be maybe a chicken noodle or a vegetable or a minestrone, in a pot, and then you take that empty can now and you fill it up with maybe some other frozen vegetables that you have and dump that in your pot and then fill it up with water or a no salt added broth, which is pretty easy to find, and add that to your pot, and then maybe some leftover meats or a no salt added canned lentil or something like that, and add that to your pot, you've now kind of quadrupled your volume of soup. You've got more portions and you've diluted out the sodium. So it's a much healthier option for sure.
Oh, fantastic. Sarah, thank you for coming and being part of Aboriginal Voices.
My pleasure.
Ramon Karakwape Nishnakasan Arobuskat Dostin Miksototum. Hello, I'm Ramon Karakwape. I'm from Arobuskat First Nation, Namigo Clan, and I'm a youth council member for various political organizations like Anishinaabe Eski Nation, Chiefs of Ontario, also on the Wellness Council for Ndayan, and I'm also a music artist and a movement founder.
Now, we're not going to go into music yet. I know that's going to be one you want to talk about, especially since you're here in Kingston to do a set on stage. I'm looking forward to that. But Tell me a little bit about being a youth activist. You know, what got you into this?
Well, growing up, I was been subjected to assimilation and not only intergenerational trauma, but current day assimilation through the Indian Act that's still present, but also bills that come into play like Bill 5 and C-5 that are present day assimilation efforts. And what gotten me into advocating for First Nations rights was the land. And, you know, growing up, I didn't realize why I was going through what I went through was because of an intergenerational trauma. And also that disconnect with the land, the language, and the culture. And it affected me a lot. And in my teen years, I really lost myself. And I was out there doing bad things. But when I went back home, my mushroom, he accepted me for who I was, even though he was a residential school survivor. He should be the most upset, I find, in my life of what had happened to him, but he forgave this assimilation process. And that acceptance that he gave to me when he found healing during his life helped me so much to the point I felt guilty for what I was doing. And that I was ignoring the culture, that I was running away from who I was. I was running away from the land. So when he gave me that acceptance, it was almost like a door had opened for me to come back to myself and where I come from and who we are as a people. So when he passed not too long later from COVID, I wanted to make him proud, even in spirit. So I decided to go back to my culture. I decided to go back to school. I decided to become sober. I decided to learn from the land. And when we came up for his funeral, you know, I felt numb. And I went to go sit by the Attawabiskat River. And I remember sitting there, and all of a sudden, like, it started to come out. Then it felt like that river spoke to me. The river told me to help my community, because that's what he would have wanted. And that's what I could do to make him proud. And that set me on a journey of advocacy, which started with music. So I started taking music seriously, and I started advocating for my people and the music, advocating for the water that we have around the Attawabiskat River and the one that's inside of our in our pipes that we use to drink from the water treatment. And I would advocate for that change to our governance systems. Over and over, I felt like I was repeating myself to no avail. And when I got onto a youth council with the political organization, we had a chance to meet Justin Trudeau. So he met with our council, and I told him what I wanted. I wanted clean water for Attawabiskat. Then the thing that he told me, I felt like was a workaround answer, saying that they had a certain amount of funds ready to give to us, but we had to come up with the plan. So he threw it back onto us. And essentially that went nowhere. Even we went to the highest, what you would say, perceivable power in Canada. It went nowhere. And over time, with these governance systems and in my youth council, I started to figure out just how much politics comes into play when it comes to trying to get the land protected and the water protected. And I started to understand why my community was the way it was and just where it's going, especially with the minerals that we sit on. And with these ongoing bills right now, Bill 5 and C-5, that just reminds me that this is not over and this is going to continue on for a long, long time. These bills are very worrying because it sets a precedent that our rights can be overrided. The rights of the land as well can be overrided. The treaty that we hold at a federal level can be overrided. And we would be assimilated. And First Nations are historically known to be almost experimented on before they bring it back to the general public. And I think these bills are bigger than just the environment and what can happen to it around us, but as well as the rights that we carry as humans in nations. Because as a First Nations, I'm an Indian. I have a status card, and I'm just a piece of paper. I'm not a citizen of Canada. But even with this Indian Act and the treaty, I'm not sovereign either, because we rely on those funds that come to our band council from ISK. So we're not truly sovereign in that way of being organized to have a response against Bill 5 or C5 because it's a conflict of interest. And what I've been seeing with the organization is to tie this back is that they've had a lack of response because their funding pools are put in risk when truly advocating for what the people want.
That's a lot there. And I appreciate you giving me all of that because two things that come to mind quickly. I mean, if Prime Minister Trudeau, I assume it was Justin Trudeau because of your age, right? If Prime Minister Trudeau put it back in your hands, I sat and thought about that. If they put it in my hands right now, with my experiences all these years, then I would have to get a team together and we would go and we'd make a plan and bring it to them and say, okay, you've said the plan has to be from our community. And here are the people that I've drawn in from our community. I'm going to ask you now, what do you think of our plan? And let him now respond to it. And he's only going to have a day to read it. Because once he's done that, he's got all the information in his hands, and he already gave you the plan responsibility. Are you, the young people out there now, starting to figure out what the plan's going to be? And is this whole event you're having here in Kingston right now part of that plan?
Yeah, just to go a bit into that, when I spoke to him, this was about a year, almost 2 years ago. I was very naive, and I'm still naive now, but I was much more naive back then. And I took his word saying that there was this pool and he needed to come with the plan. So I decided, okay, I'm going to figure this out. Mm-hmm. So that's what I started to build independence of trying to figure out something without having to ask someone to take care of it for me. And I think that was a mindset that was passed down to me from previous leaders and organizations by, you know, making a call out for change without being a part of that change. And for me, I started to do some research about how could, you know, for water, for instance, to get clean water in Attawapiskat, we need a reverse osmosis system. Mm. But currently we have a class 3 chemically assisted system that only cleans out certain microbial and certain things out of the water. I can't remember the names at the moment, but it's only good for cleaning out, you know, human waste and bacteria. Mm-hmm. But it's not good for clearing out mercury or diesel. And that's something that a reverse osmosis system that we use for the community pump, that's where it's being used, but it's not for the pipes that are pumped to the houses yet. And that cost, I believe, is around $10 million to update the current infrastructure that we have. So I'm pretty sure that our community already was aware of what we needed. But I think he was just throwing the question back at me to facilitate conversation with no actual work done on it. Because I'm sure that we had this plan set in place because we already had the system being used for the pump. So that's a clear precedent there. And to bring it back more of how the youth are starting to give a response for change, we started to see that a lot of deflection was coming from the organizations that say that they represent us and from the government that pretends to listen. Over and over and over since these organizations, these indigenous organizations like NAN, Chiefs of Ontario, were made, the same thing is being said since the 70s and 80s. The same changes and wants that we would like to see are still being said today. Mm-hmm. But no real change. So we've been in circles and circles and circles. The government knows the issues with our communities. They have the relevant data on the issues with our communities, but they're not willing to release those funds for us to have that autonomy to take care of ourselves. Every amount of money that is sent to a First Nation is stolen from a trust of the government, which we have to apply for and get approved, even though it should already be ours, especially when it's written in treaties. And this is how it connects to Bill 5 and C5, is that it's that same rhetoric that's in the bills of having, it's not specifically stated, but we will consult with First Nations. That is absolute BS, because I know what their consultation process is. They'll call a First Nation, they don't even have to answer, and that counts as consultation to them. Or like the previous meeting that the Prime Minister had with chiefs from all over in July at the Canadian Museum of History, that could be counted as consultation. So we have to make sure that there's not this BS going on in the bills that don't have FPIC, free, prior, and informed consent within the bills. And we're noticing that the same trend is happening no matter how much we tell them that you need our permission, you need our involvement in every step of the process when it comes to dealing with minerals in treaty land. It's always ignored, just as much as the issues that we need help with is always ignored. And with Bill 5 and C5, that's just another blow of making what the conclusions that we come to true. And over the time, as a youth council member, I started to notice that our systems that we're in is not working for us, and that the people that are supposed to advocate and speak for us aren't doing it. And if they are doing it, the government never takes it into account and does real work on it. So we decided as youth to band together to fight for change and to make sure that these things are implemented and that we're no longer something to be bulldozed, or we're no longer something that's like tape code red that they just cut over to have access to our lands. So we decided to band together in different movements, mainly from Treaty 9, but I know that it will grow across Canada. And in Treaty 9, you have my cousin and my auntie and uncles who started Here We Stand, and they created a permanent encampment along the Attawapiskat and river near Nishkaniga, where they meet. And in that encampment, they're creating a village to show that to the government, once they make their way up there, that we occupy these lands. Because even if they are bulldozing over treaty rights, we still have more of a response of actually physically being there. Because my aunt and uncle have been up and down that river since they were born in those areas. And they know exactly the interest points. They know exactly the waterways and the watersheds. They know where our burials are along the river. They know where some of our teaching locations are, where we got a lot of our spiritual teachings that came from Creator. And we have an effort going, I'd say, on location in the Ring of Fire. So it's definitely a special economic zone dictated by Bill 5. And that's probably the first thing that they're going to come after. But I'd say we have different levels of responses. So Here We Stand is on the ground. Then we have different levels, like Youth Rising Together, Mamo Inanuwak Webasigo Stamak, and the movement I founded, Okinawak. We're taking that advocacy and awareness effort, and we're bringing it to the rest of Canada. So while we have our front lines, we also have different efforts going on. And with Okinawak, our effort is we started to band youth together to give a platform to them to share to the rest of the world about what's going on with Bill 5 and C5. And we started to hold awareness rallies because we noticed that the organizations that represent us aren't doing what we asked them to do. So we decided to represent ourselves, the youth. And we started to go to Toronto, Queen's Park, and we held a rally there. We held a rally at Parliament Hill in Ottawa. We marched over and protested outside the Canadian Museum of History while the Prime Minister met with the chiefs. All youth. Then we brought it to North Bay. We brought it to Moose Cree First Nation. We brought it to Mattagami First Nation. And now we're bringing it to Kingston this weekend. Then the weekend after, we're bringing it to Thunder Bay. And the reason we're holding these rallies is not only to give the youth a platform to speak, but to show that we're still active to the government and that we're deciding to represent ourselves and making sure that we won't be kicked over. Because the organizations that represent us seem to be doing a one-and-done rally, and then a court case. But the thing that's dangerous about bringing a treaty into a court case is if that treaty loses, there's a precedent. And it's much more than the land that could be in jeopardy, but our rights as Indigenous people, especially when you bring a treaty into a court. And that's what's worrying for me, is that I feel like this is the beginning of the next wave of assimilation efforts to turn First Nations into municipalities, to turn us into citizens, and to relinquish any status that we hold. And I'm worried for my people, which is why the youth are taking such a big effort to respond, despite the lack of resources and support that we have. But we're finding it in different ways, such as someone who's here with us right now with the Legal Advocates for Nature's Defense is supporting our movements and creating a response. And we're also bringing these bills to court and being interveners, supported by 9 First Nations. We're making sure that a response is strong, so that they know that we can't be pushed over, at least not easily. Because if they're going to push us over, they're going to have to kill us. But they can't kill the Indian.
Ramon, I like what you're saying, because I've got a lot to think about here. But one of the quick questions that comes to mind is, how can people find out about your organization? Is there a website, or can they follow you somehow?
Yeah, Okinawak is barely 3 months old, less than 3 months. So what we have set up is social media at the moment. And we're looking to transition into maybe a nonprofit organization or an NGO.
So you're gonna give us your phone number and your email, and we'll be able to chat with you, not in a week or two, but in a couple of weeks, and continue this conversation. Would that be okay?
Yeah, it will just cost you $20.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, well, we'll just put it down on our funding drive for CFRC. That's good. You know, the only thing that I can think of now is that I'm going to shift your thinking and your conversation, but it's probably going to be welding right back into it, is your music. What is it about your music that's drawing you also to a stage?
With my music, back to tie back to the story I gave of how I started to take it seriously by implementing First Nations advocacy in it. One of the first songs that I made was called The Life of Water. And I went out to the lake with my mom on the frozen ice and recorded a music video with my white regalia on. And I decided to send it to, I decided to send it to Imaginative, and the biggest Indigenous film festival in the world, and they accepted it. I was really confused because it was like one of my first works that I took serious, and now it was being shown at a worldwide stage to other Indigenous people. And I realized that, you know, people would listen when you gear it towards a way that's digestible for them. So not your everyday person would be willing to stop by and listen to a speech or your work or follow up with your initiatives, but they got 3 minutes to hear a song. Mm-hmm. And that's the way we can connect to the youth. And that's how I found that I can relay messages to other youth, was through songs. And over time, that changed into personal self-expression. So songs about love or girls or dumb stuff like that. But then every now and then there'd be something about the land. And, you know, just to give a little more context to, or bring it back to what we're talking about, I made a song called Dusk Till Dawn, November last year. Oh my gosh, I'm going through puberty again. November last year. And the song was exactly about what's going on right now. And in that song, it was talking about how we have to face up a threat that's the size of the moon, that's coming for our land, that's coming for the diamonds in the land, the minerals, that's coming for our rights, but also speaks about the past initiatives. So in that song, it's saying, will you be here with us from dusk till dawn, which is a call out to, you know, our allies, supporters, our fellow people. Will you stand with us even during these tough times of assimilation? And can we band together to stand against this and protect the land? That's what the song's about. And that's something that I also reiterated at Chiefs Assemblies too. Every Chiefs Assembly that I was finally made aware of what's to come, I kept telling them that something's coming. This is coming for 2 years now. And it came, and still the response was so slow and late. And maybe it's just because I'm a youth and I want to do things fast and quick. We decided to do the movement. But more back on the music is, even though it's more of a hobby now, the biggest drive is connected to the movement of wanting to advocate for my people's rights, to bring awareness to our situation, and to bring equity, equality, and have environmental stewardship and true sovereignty over the lands that we sit on and the people that we are.
Thank you. garage rock, hip hop, folk, punk, and electropop. New, Canadian, and even local. Indie Wake Up handles your morning. Here for you, Kingston. Weekday mornings from 8 to 10.